find his work on the cover of the sports section, or hit the website, visit registerguard.com, follow on Twitter, the handle at AustinMeekRG. As always, our Tuesday leadoff guy. Austin, how you doing?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good. How are you?
Great. You were at Matt Knight Arena Friday. The Oregon women's basketball team took on this terrific Oregon State team. First of kind of a unique home-and-home civil war. OSU hung on 43-40. Ducks had chances. But would I be accurate, if not almost cliche, in saying OSU's experience was the difference down the stretch?
Yeah, I think that's the unavoidable conclusion there. You know, Oregon's getting closer. You look at the scores of the games. Oregon State was winning by an average of about 30 points the last couple years. Two games this year decided by single digits, but when it came down to it, I think you're right. Oregon State has players who have won Pac-12 titles and played in the Final Four. Sidney Weiss is a senior who's been around the block. Oregon's got a bunch of freshmen. They're really talented. The upside is really high. For Oregon, I don't think it's a question of if, it's just a question of when that group really gets it rolling. They're gaining ground, but for now, Oregon State is still the team on top in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, you had a conversation with Coach Graves, kind of telling a lot of freshmen now 20 games in, they've gained some, let's call it growing up time. And it seems like Coach Graves feels like he's almost kind of in between. You can't keep leaning on youth, but it doesn't mean it still isn't a factor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they are kind of in that weird in-between place where, you know, Kelly Graves says he, as a staff, they don't talk about being young anymore. They don't talk about having a bunch of freshmen, even though, you know, it's obvious that they are young. They have three freshmen in the starting lineup. They have five freshmen who play in their rotation. So they are young, but at this point in the season, they're not leaning on that. You know, they don't look at it that way anymore. But then when you have games like this weekend, when it's a close game and it comes down to the final minutes and you've got, you know, a senior on the other side making the big plays, you know, you can't avoid the comparison. You know, the fact that on Oregon State side, you have players who have been doing this for 4 years, and on Oregon side, you're relying on players who, you know, had never played in a Civil War until this week. So, I mean, the difference there is obvious.
Yeah, a final thought on that. You mentioned it in passing. I heard what Coach Graves and Scott Ruick of Oregon State had to say. And, you know, Oregon losing both games, but you mentioned the first 2 years, the first four games, and they've closed the gap. And with that youth in the rotation, that Oregon may be starting to show it can win these games. And are the people on the Oregon side of the opinion that despite losing, something was gained?
Well, I thought Scott Ruick made an interesting point about the belief level and how he could tell that even though Oregon didn't come out on top in either of those two games, there was a belief level with Oregon that maybe they didn't have in past years. And I think that was true. It's been, 13 straight now, I think, for Oregon, losses to Oregon State in this series. And, you know, that can become kind of a mental block almost. And maybe that was true in years past. But I think with this group, it's kind of a fresh start. And even though that losing streak now continues, I think there's probably some confidence with Oregon coming away from the Civil War this year that, yeah, we can play with Oregon State. They still got to get over that last hurdle and actually beat the Beavers. But at least there's some confidence that they can play with them now, which wasn't the case in years past.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, let's get to the men's team. I don't know if I buy looking past an opponent with so much on the line, you know, the winning streak, they're unbeaten in Pac-12 play. But safe to say, be it preparation, execution, the way they shot in the second half, not a team who put their best foot forward, and particularly in the second half, man, their offense just looked out of whack.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen Oregon look that out of sync. And Jordan Bell basically said it today. He said that they needed to lose a game. You know, they'd been on this winning streak, and maybe they'd gotten sloppy with some things. And he said they kind of needed that wake-up call. Now, I don't think Dana Altman was going that far. As the coach, you never want to lose a game. But I think in his own way, Dana Altman also appreciated having the opportunity to put that film on and show his team all the things that went wrong in that game and, you know, send the message that, hey, you guys think you're pretty good, but you got to bring it every night or this is what can happen. And so we'll see where it goes from here. You know, Oregon cannot afford to have a bunch of wake-up calls this season because the way Arizona is playing, I think Arizona may not have more than one or two losses in the Pac-12 by the time this thing is over with. So, you know, this is kind of maybe the mulligan for Oregon, but they've still got two road trips ahead. They got to go to L.A. and they got to go to the Bay Area, so they can't afford to have many more days like they had against Colorado.
I guess on the other side, it's easy to draw a cliche. It's one game on the road in a conference. They did win 17 in a row. Colorado, despite their record, is not a horrible team. And this was a really big game for the Buffs. But now Oregon, 13th in the country, 8-1 in the league, with recent history showing that Altman and his staff have a tendency to fix what ails. I mean, Ducks are in really good shape hitting February.
Yeah, they are in good shape. I think it kind of depends. You know, was this Colorado game just a blip on the radar, or was it indicative of the fact that Oregon does have some weaknesses that other teams can exploit? I don't know. You know, Oregon went on this great winning streak. It was, what, 17 in a row?
Yep.
School record. But if you look at that winning streak, the teams they were beating, there weren't a bunch of, you know, top 25 caliber teams in that streak, and there weren't a bunch of road games in that streak. So I think that's one thing that still is yet to be determined about Oregon. You know, they've got a couple really good road wins. I thought beating Utah on the road was a really good win, but they're going to have to back that up now. Their toughest road games are still ahead. I think there's, you know, despite that long winning streak, I think there's still some things that we don't know about Oregon that we're going to find out in the next month.
Talking with our Tuesday leadoff man, Austin Meek. Piece in today's paper, Arsalan Kazemi, former Duck, first Iranian-born player to get a D1 scholarship, to be drafted in the NBA. And the subject was the executive order, President Trump last Friday, the ban. If you could share the part of the conversation, you spoke with Arsalan, where he expressed his concerns kind of along the lines of what was happening in Jordan and what some people he knew faced.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people listening to this probably remember Arsalan from his time at Oregon. You know, great player, great representative for the university in his time here, kind of a fan favorite. And a guy whose story is pretty well known as the first Iranian-born player to get a scholarship in Division I basketball and also the first Iranian-born player to be drafted in the NBA draft. So he really was a trailblazer for people from his country coming here to play basketball. And when I talked to him, obviously he was concerned about what's happening in the United States right now and what that will mean for players from his country. You know, he hoped when he came over here that he could really, you know, show the way for players from his country to do the same thing. And with what's happening here now, that's gotten harder. And so it is a worry that, you know, as a kid growing up today in Iran, could he come over here and do what he's done? It would be tough. It would be very tough. And that's a sad thing because, you know, all of us who live here in America, you know, we take pride in the fact that this is a free country where people can come over here with a dream and pursue it. And, you know, you hope that that still will be the case, that players in the future will be able to do what Arsalan Kazemi did.
You know, he also noted something in this executive order that could be impacted. You know, like you mentioned, his credentials, and he hoped he would have opened doors for others from his country. What did he have to say, though, about access to players in Iran or players from that nation getting exposure in America, maybe via basketball camps, and some of the fears or concerns that have now surfaced?
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, in order to get recruited, coaches have to see you. And in order to get drafted, scouts have to see you. And if you're a scout or a coach, Iran is probably not at the top of the list of the places you want to go visit right now to scout players, because it's really hard to get in. And by the same token, if you're an Iranian basketball player who wants to get seen by coaches in the United States, it's not a great time to be trying to get your visa to come over here and do that. So there's just a lot of hurdles in the way in order for that to happen right now. And hopefully, in time, it'll get easier for players to follow that path. Because I think, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to do this story was, you know, I think sometimes sports can show people a different perspective on what's happening in the news and make them think about things in a different way. And maybe there's people who have a really entrenched opinion about this issue, who might see it a little bit differently when they think about, you know, somebody they know, a player that wore the jersey for their school, a player that they rooted for, and really think about, you know, what does this mean for people like him? And, you know, hopefully people read that and maybe saw a little bit different perspective on that.
Well, I had not even considered it. I read it and I did, so there's one. final thought, football season ends Sunday in Houston. The Patriots try to add to a legacy. The Falcons hoping to, you know, join the Saints or Seahawks, you know, teams who mostly underachieved the history of the franchise and then finally won a Super Bowl. You have any kind of preference or rooting interest or thought who might win Sunday?
Not really. I don't know. What do you think, Steve? I sort of feel like the hype for this Super Bowl has been a little bit muted. Do you feel that way? Has there been a little bit less hoopla around the Super Bowl than what we're used to?
Yeah, I just don't know that the Falcons generate the kind of national excitement. And it's like, well, the Patriots are in it again. So the hope is that the game itself will be more exciting than Media Day and Radio Row, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there is some Patriots fatigue going on. You know, as great as they are, and even if you're not a Patriots fan, you've got to respect what they've done. But, you know, the Bill Belichick, Mr. Grumpy Pants routine, I think, has kind of gotten old for everybody. Tom Brady, I think, you know, non-Patriots fans may be a little tired of Tom Brady. And I think you're right about the Falcons, too. You know, they're a good team, and they're a team that I feel like ought to be interesting. But I just can't find myself being very interested in them. They've got a great offense. Julio Jones, one of the best wide receivers in the game. But something about their team just, you know, does not capture my interest. So I'm hoping that it's a good game. And I guess I'm kind of leaning toward the Falcons just because, you know, you look at the path that the Patriots took to get to the Super Bowl. They had a bye. They played the Texans, which is about as close to a bye as you can have while still playing a game in the playoffs. And they beat the Steelers at home, which was, you know, a nice win. Take nothing away from them. But the Falcons beat the Seahawks, who some people thought could get to the Super Bowl. And then they beat the Packers convincingly. And some people, you know, the Packers were basically the hottest team in the NFL. So I think the Falcons have been more impressive in getting to the Super Bowl, so I'm going to lean towards them.
All righty. We will note that and hold you to it for eternity. You could, of course, catch his work in the Register Guard. Check out that piece with Arsalan Kazemi. If you don't get the paper, try registerguard.com on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Always appreciate you getting us started, and I'll catch up with you at the arena this weekend.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
All right, take it easy, Austin.